you just take all these wars. I mean, does Ukraine really think that it can destroy all of Russia? I mean, it's absurd. And the same thing, you look in the Middle East. Does Hamas think that they're going to really wipe out Israel and all the Jews are going to leave the Middle East? I mean, what's your end goal here?
Yeah.
There is, you know, you can't get to the peace because nobody will talk to each other.
You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
And welcome. You are listening to and watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm your host, Carrie Lutz. Well, we've got in our extremely popular series, The World According to Martin Armstrong. Martin Armstrong is back for installment number 5. And boy, do we have a lot to talk about here, Marty.
We do live in interesting times.
And that's a curse under the Chinese Confucian system, right?
Yeah.
So, interesting times, endless wars. It seems like the military-industrial complex, the neocons, can just never have enough wars going on in the world at any given time.
Well, as you know, I know some of them. And my opinion is that communism just fell by itself because it was effectively inefficient. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, basically, I think, just regret that and continue. They don't want to admit that communism collapsed. I mean, you got billionaire Chinese and Russians, etc. I mean, you wouldn't have that under a communist, you know, regime. The government owns everything. And I think when this kind of all started, when Khrushchev said, "We will bury you," and they, you know, all rallied up together, all right, we'll put, you know, democracy around the world. But of course, their version of democracy is really totalitarianism anyhow. But as Mark Twain said, if voting really mattered, they wouldn't let us do it. So I think that, you know, that they are just constantly pushing for war because they never got to fight it, you know, to end democracy. I mean, to end you know, the communist state, it just collapsed.
And speaking of communism being inherently inefficient, because from a economic standpoint, the price function's not allowed to function. The pricing mechanism isn't allowed to function. It's set by smart people who know better than the market. And that leads to the inefficiency, malinvestment, kind of like what the Federal Reserve does with interest rates, right? But China is encountering the very same thing now as the former Soviet Union, right?
Yeah, you know, when China opened up, you know, I was invited there after 97. And I went, you know, for the Asian currency crisis. So I think I was the first Westerner they invited in. And I ended up in this room actually answering questions about capitalism versus communism. Like, they were monitoring, there were 249 varieties of tea, and they were monitoring absolutely everything in the country, but they were not interfering. And I had to answer questions like, well, why is this tea selling for like $1 here, but $5 over there? I said, well, where does it come from? Well, here. I said, well, first you have transportation costs. They go, oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, you got to get it there.
You know, communism, if it was $1 in one place, it's $1 everywhere, even if it costs you $10 to get it there. You know, that's why the whole thing just really collapsed. Plus, you know, you were not allowed to think or create something. So any innovation was largely in weapons or things of that nature. They never developed a consumer economy. You know, that's the famous 1959 kitchen debate of Nixon and Khrushchev. showing all the innovations in the American kitchen that did not exist in Russia. But so I think that, that's, these people were just against communism, but they ended up hating the very people that are there rather than what the system was. So, I mean, even when Reagan came to office, the neocons were against him for meeting with Gorbachev. They actually came out and said, oh, you can never trust a Russian, it was NATO invited Russia to join. That's why there was the coup against Gorbachev. And that's when Yeltsin is throwing the tank and the whole thing in 91 collapsed. But so I don't know. I just see that these people are regret that they never got to fight, the great fight with communism. And so it's just endless wars forever.
I guess they'd ever read Sun Tzu, that every war is won or lost before the first shot is fired.
Exactly.
And they won the war, but it wasn't enough for them.
No, it wasn't. And, you have to look at this stuff, like giving long-range missiles to Ukraine. That's not for the front line. That's to attack Russia.
What could go wrong?
They always wanted to escalate everything. I have some friends in Israel, and they're starting to wonder if Israel is just a vassal state, of the U.S. And, because a lot of people don't believe that, this attack was totally surprised.
Pearl Harbor wasn't either, right?
No, absolutely not. I mean, even that's all come out that the U.S. had broken the code. They knew everything. And then there was a big Senate investigation on it, alleging that FDR knew. And it concluded, well, we're not sure if he knew or not.
Hey, well, we just learned, we learn things over time through improved technology and through people fessing up when they no longer have anything to lose. We just found out that the magic bullet in JFK's assassination wasn't so magical after all.
No. I knew Arlen Specter, who came up with that little theory. He lived about three doors from me on the beach down in New Jersey. And when I asked him about that, he would just smile and not reply.
Yeah, well, yeah, plead the fifth.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the thing. News today, I think the news was always controlled, but now you can see it's controlled and you can deconstruct, you can drill down. Like, there's a service that I subscribe to, which looks pretty good, called ground.news. And they show every single publication that's carrying the story on the right, on the left. They even say who owns these publications. And you get a view of the news that you never really could get before. When Walter Cronkite got up there, his word was literally the law. It was like God was speaking to you. And nobody questioned it. And now I challenge you to find the news reporter that someone doesn't challenge or everyone doesn't question.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, this is basically exactly how they brought about the communist revolution. They controlled the press. That was it. And look, 30 years ago, I would say they at least pretended to be honest. Now they don't really care. It's in your face. It's like, yeah, so what? What are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
I mean, even like going after Trump, what's happened since then? Argentina said, oh, that's a good idea. So now they're criminally killing their opposition. Brazil's going after Bolsonaro. I mean, this is now going to start spreading.
Doesn't Putin do things like that? Hasn't he off the opposition or just tossed them in jail? I mean, what other countries do that?
Ukraine.
Yeah, right. And, it's become an alarming worldwide trend of militarizing or weaponizing. Well, you called it, I thought you summed it up well when you called it the Department of Just Us. Reminded me of George Carlin, who said it's all a big club and you're not in it.
And that's pretty much it. It's Look, they've always done this to some degree. I mean, I had met an executive VP of, I think he was with the New York Post. And they put him in prison for 18 months. And he explained to me how it actually works. He says the government would call and say, we have a favor. We want you to kill the story or spin it this way or whatever. If you don't, they come after you personally.
Mm-hmm.
And they put him in jail, I think, for 18 months for the absurd hiring someone to work at the Post who didn't show up.
A no-show job.
I mean,
not than that. The government runs on no-show jobs.
Exactly. I mean, it's just absurd, absolutely absurd. I mean, I've been to Brussels where, you know, these guys get salaries, but then they actually get an extra couple hundred euro if they show up. And you see them in the morning going over and they slide their card in and then they turn around and leave. So they get the extra 200. I mean, it was just like, you know, do you steal all the soap out of the bathroom there as well? You know,
probably do. I wouldn't put it past them. Hey, so, you know, fighting the cycle. Like, that's what central bank's purpose is, to fight the cycle that's been occurring for thousands of years, right? We have, first we have speculation, then it becomes excessive. A bubble occurs, but before you could print money, we only had one bubble at a time. We couldn't have multiple bubbles. It's futile to fight the cycle, isn't it?
Most of the time, these cycles are accelerated by government itself. They're always trying to eliminate the business cycle, which is what Karl Marx was all about. He didn't like the boom and bust, so he thought if he took all the assets away from everybody, like Klaus Schwab, you'll own nothing but be happy, that would terminate the business cycle. And it did not. Because the business cycle includes everything, war, climate, you name it. I mean, there's a book out, 1177 BC. I mean, when, you know, the climate turned bad up north, all these people invaded the south and wiped out most of the civilizations. I mean, the Egyptians survived, but they wiped out most of the Bronze Age civilizations. They called them the Sea People. They didn't know where they came from, but they were all driven south because of climate. I mean, the same thing has come out now about, you know, why did, you know, Attila the Hun invade Europe? There was a massive drought over there.
Yeah.
So they moved, you know, most of these types of things are caused by that. So climate's always been changing. It's, you know, this propaganda, oh, we've created warming since the global, you know, development of the industrial, you know, revolution is absolutely absurd. I mean, it was far warmer back during the Roman period.
Yeah, that's true. We had the Middle Age, mini ice age, and the medieval warming period. Nobody can explain that.
Yeah, they're just cycles that always take place. And you can read, you know, basically John Adams complaining about how cold it was in the 1700s, that the ground was frozen 2 feet deep and they couldn't even plant anything.
Hey, so cycles. We going to see a crash in October here? What's the system saying? What's Socrates saying?
Well, yes, we have changes here going into year end. That's for sure. We're not looking at a massive crash in like the stock market, like some of these people were talking about for, you know, like 1929.
Mm-hmm.
You have to really look at the fundamentals behind those charts. And 1929, basically, first of all, it was most of the money was all over here because of World War One.
Right.
And then we had the auto revolution. So it was kind of like a dot-com bubble. And all the foreign money was here to begin with. And so they were just splurging. Then when Europe got into trouble, they started pulling the money back out. That creates the crash here. 1931, all of Europe defaults. Britain went into a moratorium, eventually came out. But, you know, you can buy a lot of their bonds on eBay, you know, and frame them up if you want. We used to have a whole bunch of them to remind us what happens to government debt. It always defaults. You know, it was different back then. The dollar went up dramatically. That's why Roosevelt even confiscated gold, because the dollar had gone up so high because nobody wanted the assets. They were just looking to park money. And so he confiscated the gold and then, you know, devalued the dollar, took gold from $20.67 to $35. That was a rise in the dollar at that point. And then all of Europe was defaulting. So we have to look at these things. This current situation is the opposite. You have to really say, okay, fine, you want to sell all your stocks and go buy, you know, Biden's latest issue of bonds when he just, you know, sent another $100 billion over to Ukraine and now to fight Israel as well? Our problem today is government. They're coming in with CBDCs because, in their view, they would collect 35% more in taxes if paper money was eliminated. And everybody had to be on the books. And they think they'll collect 35% more in taxes. That's what they estimate the underground economy is. You know, so, you know, when you hire that 16-year-old girl next door to watch the kids while you and your wife go out, where's her taxes? it's just absurd. You know, you find a $100 bill in a parking lot, where's their 50%? You know, it's cheating.
So de-dollarization in the BRICS currency. I mean, is this a question of, like Mark Twain said, rumors of my death are greatly exaggerated?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look, the strength behind the dollar has nothing to do with gold, has nothing to do with the government. All these emerging markets, when they borrow money, where do they have to go? New York City. New York is basically, it's the financial capital of the world. London used to be.
Well, is Miami now the financial capital?
Well, yes, they're moving it all to Miami for sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, the BRICS are not in a position to deplace the dollar. Is China going to fund all these and emerging markets and lend money? And, you know, their banking system's not going to handle that. Okay. You know, there's nobody there to replace the financial markets of the United States. They're the deepest in the world. And until, you know, that's what the strength behind the dollar really is. And we have to understand that. It's, even when we get into this war stuff, they're fighting over borders, and this is all so antiquated, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, this is the 21st century, and we're acting like it's medieval times here.
Yeah, I mean, that's why Adam Smith even wrote Wealth of a Nation. Why? Because it was a retort against the French physiocrats. They said the wealth of a nation is its agriculture, and therefore that started the empire building. The more land you have, the richer the nation is. And Smith said, no, wealth of a nation, if you made a saddle in London and you sold it to somebody in France, you still came home with gold. So it wasn't just agriculture. But these people fight over borders that are absurd.
And they're arbitrary, meaningless. The border that they're fighting over is arbitrary, and the one that they want is arbitrary. You know, you could go back to biblical times. Well, you know, hey, all this land was submerged at some point. So who owned it then?
Yeah, it's, you just take all these wars. Does Ukraine really think that it can destroy all of Russia? I mean, it's absurd. And the same thing, you look in the Middle East. Does Hamas think that they're going to really wipe out Israel and all the Jews are going to leave the Middle East? I mean, what's your end goal here?
Yeah.
It, there is, you know, you can't get to the peace because nobody will talk to each other.
All right. So, hey, talking about what's happening in the world here, the endless wars, the fighting, the cycle, all of this. So the dollar is here until something dramatically goes wrong and it doesn't exist and it can't be used anymore. But when we look at China, who seem to be the successor to the U.S., the place is imploding. Their real estate market has hit the skids. More distressing than their real estate market is the quality of the infrastructure that they have built since the country opened up. You know, when you go on those highways, they're a mess. I mean, hey, we have defective infrastructure in the West and in the U.S., plenty of it, but they have like zero standards, or they adhere to zero standards. Just do a search for tofu dreg construction, and you see that the country is literally falling apart at the seams, Martin.
Yes, look, they have their problems, and it's a learning curve, more or less. But what I would say in China's defense is they have looked at the economic model, and they've seen what made the United States great. It was a consumer market. They look at Germany. Fine, Germany's the largest economy in Europe, but the average German has less net worth than an Italian. Why? Because they're so afraid of inflation that they kept their taxes so high, and their model was mercantilism. We build something to sell it to somebody else. Whereas the United States, it's a consumer-based economy. So that's why everybody wanted to sell stuff here, from Japan, Toyotas, and BMWs, etc. So China is moving in that direction. They understand the difference, and they're trying to create a consumer-based economy there. I mean, it's going to take time.
Yeah.
All right. Not right now. But
not happening. Yeah.
But they at least understand what Germany does not.
Yeah, that's
going to
be a two-way
in that direction. I mean, you're talking about 15 to 20 years, but it will replace the United States in that sense.
Mm-hmm. All right. What's your take on Elon Musk? We were talking about control of the media, and I don't know his agenda, but he certainly shined a bright spotlight on government manipulation of social media, of websites, of news, to the point where cases go into the Supreme Court. I don't have any great confidence in the Supreme Court. Like I always said, if your last hope is that the court's going to do the right thing, then you're out of hope. But we see it. It's coming up here. They're going to be really hard pressed to uphold the government's right and these businesses' right to control information at the behest of the business and at the behest of the government. What's your take on Musk?
No, look, I think he has actually served a very important purpose. Kind of like Edward Snowden in that way, that, you know, changing our view of things. The government has gone far out of control with, you know, controlling social media and all this stuff. It's largely because they know that this is imploding on them. They're getting desperate. As of January 1st, an American cannot go to Europe without being pre-approved. Mm. And what they're going to do is put in looking at what's your politics. Oh, you protested against COVID? No, you can't come to Europe. You know, they're moving more and more towards this, you know, what they were calling social credit scores.
Right.
And this is all what our computer has been forecasting, that we're looking at the collapse of these Republican forms of government by after 2032.
Mm-hmm.
They are just simply desperate, at this stage. You know, I see it more or less like Joseph Stalin. You know, he became so paranoid, and it wasn't good enough that he controlled everybody. He was like, what did you think? What are you thinking about? Are you a possible enemy? And a friend who grew up in East Germany, and when the wall fell, his father went and got a Stasi file, and he saw all his friends were actually ratting on him. Then he came home and he started punching holes in the wall, pulling out microphones. And to this day, he said his father refuses to ever talk to anybody other than family. But I mean, that's what you're looking at. Why put microphones in people's houses? Oh, what are you talking about? Are you a possible threat? This is where we're going.
Well, they don't even have to put the microphone in anymore. They got this.
Oh, yeah. No, that's very true. They can track you and then say where you're at. They know everything at this stage in the game. So this is really very quite serious because, these people are, government is not there for you. They're there for them.
Yep.
We have to understand that the biggest problem with government is that the flaw that our founding fathers put in was the lack of term limits. Because once they are there, they are on that side of the fence. And then they always look at us as the enemy. It's simple as that. Digital IDs, and we got to try, where are they going or what are they going to do now? The best form of government I ever saw in all the studies that I've done was the city of Genoa. The head of state, like the president or the doge, rotated on an annual basis among the rich families. But he was only there for, because he was there for 1 year and that family wouldn't get control again for another 25 years. Nobody would pass a law that was detrimental to the people, on the street. And it was more of a competitive thing of Genoa against Florence and Venice. So everybody benefited. It wasn't this rich versus poor thing, which was all started by Marx. I mean, look, there are people that have different talents. Somebody can be a brain surgeon, another person can be a quarterback. What you earn is based upon how many people in that field are there.
Right, the value. So going back to Musk, so besides his influence on Twitter, which, I mean, if he wanted to spend $44 billion to wreak havoc, I guess it was money well spent. But what about his other enterprises and the effect you see? AI, for instance, which I knew you've been involved in for decades, but now it's really hitting the mainstream. The electric vehicles, not so much EVs for EV's sake, but the marriage of the automobile and AI and all this technology. And then is SpaceX. Basically, the guy owns space. He's controlling space. What do you make of him, his influence on the economy, on society, his significance, historical, when we look back?
Oh, I think it's going to be important. AI has been around. I mean, we were developing that in the early 70s. People have to understand that there's always been this theory that, and it really comes from people that are, I would say, don't believe in God or something of that nature. They think that our brain is just a supercomputer and consciousness comes simply by dumping a lot of information into it. So this is the theory in computing that, or you create a neural net, you keep putting everything in it, and someday it just wakes up and says, oh, wow, look, it's me and I don't like you.
Yes, Skynet.
That's very nice. I've even been a keynote speaker at American Hackers Convention. I don't see that as ever possibly taking place. I don't see a program evolving as to a self-consciousness, etc. So I think that is kind of absurd. AI can certainly outproduce a human being because it can look at everything. This chat, program that they put out, that's not really AI. You ask your question and just goes out and search it. Oh, and it comes back. Oh, what's Lady Gaga's dog's name? Oh, it's, you know, whatever. It's not making a conscious decision.
Right.
Okay. And it is learning in a sense that the more people that they opened it up for free, because the more people that started asking questions, it was expanding its knowledge base. But it's not making a conscious decision. Gee, I don't like you because of the color of your hair. It doesn't do that. And it can't reach that kind of level. But AI, as far as, replacing like a judge, I think, yes, it could.
Or how about mortgage underwriters?
Yeah, I mean, black and white, okay, that's it. Whereas these people come in with these theories like Trump. Oh, well, the 14th Amendment says insurrection, and nobody in an insurrection can be president. Well, that was written for the Civil War.
Yeah.
And so then you change the definition of all these people going in to Capitol Hill taking selfies. They were never charged with insurrection, but they want to charge Trump with insurrection. You know, I mean, It's all political. It's how you manipulate all this stuff. Yeah. Going after the head of Argentina. He manipulated the market because he told people not to say pesos. I mean, you know, so therefore he should be a criminal and charged with and put in prison. I mean, this is absurd. But this is the problem we have. Yeah, so AI, I think, is important. It will certainly help things going forward, and by eliminating a lot of the nonsense back and forth. But it's not something that's going to suddenly wake up and say, gee, I'm going to destroy the world.
It's a new technology. It's just like the Luddites smashing the looms in England because they thought they'd be out of a job, you know? So fighting technology doesn't really work. It's here. Certainly, there are jobs that are going to be eliminated by it, though, right?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, look, when trains came, they eliminated, the horse and buggies. You know, when cars came, that was the death knell to horse and buggy. The economist, the Austrian economist, Schumpeter, who called it, these are waves of creative destruction.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that whatever the technology is previously is destroyed and is replaced by a new one. So cars replace the horse and buggy. Okay. This is how it functions. He calls it basically the waves of creative destruction. And I think that's a very good title for it.
Right. Just the cycle of life, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's you go off and then, okay, fine, you create something else. But the difference between AI and a human is AI doesn't really have an imagination.
Right.
It's the person who says, gee, you know, if there's nobody here that bakes bread, maybe I should open up a store and maybe make it and I can sell things. That's why communism failed. They eliminated that. So there was no advancement. And the advancement only comes from individuals. I was doing a lot of my research at Princeton University, and I knew this professor that knew Einstein. And he shocked me one day. He says, you remind me of Einstein. I said, what? I said, I'm not brilliant or into physics. And he says, no. He said, the number one thing that Einstein said is curiosity. And if we're not curious, you don't discover anything. He says, you're curious about what makes the economy work. When he explained to me, it doesn't matter what the field is, if there has to be curiosity. If you're not curious, you're not going to discover anything.
Right. That's the
reason. That's what Einstein always said. It was his curiosity that led him down to discover things.
Curiosity and desire. Desire to improve your life, your family, whatever. Those two things together, really unstoppable force. I think we're going to leave it at that today, Martin. We covered a lot of territory. Make sure you go over to armstrongeconomics.com, sign up for Martin's newsletter. It's must reading. You get it regularly. And hey, go over to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. And I might be splitting this interview up into two pieces, so you'll be able to get the second half. And Martin, really appreciate you coming on. We will talk to you again. If you've got a question for Martin, email kl@kerrylutz.com. We'll get you an answer. Martin, we'll talk to you again real soon.
Well, thank you for inviting me. Take care of yourself over there.
Thanks for listening to Kerry Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.